Garden of Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky, and we always start off with that song because we do need respect. We need respect for all the veterans that served our nation, all the civilians that have been involved, all the veterans, civilians, and their family members that have been physiologically and psychologically affected by our environmental contamination and the acts of war. Tonight we're going to continue on with the discussion, and as we have started on depleted uranium previously, as you all know, during Desert Storm, General Schwarzkopf and his chief of staff specifically assigned me by name to clean up the depleted uranium contamination. That was from the use of uranium munitions during Operation Desert Storm. As we finished that up and took us 3 months to clean up the things, we shipped back 16 Abrams tanks and 15 Bradley fighting vehicles back to the United States that were destroyed. We were not permitted to help the British friendly fire victims, and we buried a lot of stuff in theater all over the place. It was just a mess. We also had to deal with all the uranium contamination on the Iraqi vehicles. In addition to that, we had all the radiological contamination from all the other equipment that was destroyed or used during the war in the operation. Right after we got back, we started writing our reports. Now, we had been warned in the beginning of March of 1991, what's known as the Los Alamos Memorandum, very clearly from Los Alamos, that we should lie in all of our reports to avoid any responsibility for the adverse health and environmental effects of uranium munitions or the uranium, depleted uranium, that is, are the components of other munitions that are used extensively all over. Well, it just got worse and worse and worse. In end of January 1992, after been working with the GAO and obviously writing the Army reports, a major conference was held at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, and members of the Secretariat were there. And I presented the first time at a major conference, a major paper, the recommendations on medical care, environmental cleanup for all the uranium munitions use. That's whether it's kinetic energy penetrators, bunker busters, or components and other munitions that were used extensively. Well, from that, obviously, the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute study got started. And in there, we were directed by Assistant Secretary of the Army Walker to figure out all what the health and environmental effects are of the depleted uranium munitions itself or the use of depleted uranium and other munitions and all the other things. Just continued to get worse. Medical care has been denied, delayed, and ineffective, and it continues this way to this day. Several years ago, I got a call from my cousin in Hawaii, and he said, "Doug, we got a mess out here with depleted uranium. Could you help us?" Well, ladies and gentlemen, that mess continues. And this evening, we're going to focus on the uranium munitions that are components of other munitions in Hawaii, and the effect on the Hawaiian Islands. Jim, have you been able to join us?
Yes, Doug. I'm here from Kurdistown, Hawaii, on what's known as the Big Island, 10 miles from the city of Hilo. And first, I really want to thank you for all you've done over the years to try and keep this issue visible, because it's, to me, one of the greatest concerns the world is going to be facing, the consequences of this depleted uranium use. And we're in the thick of it right here.
You're going to have to speak real close to the phone, okay, Jim?
Okay.
Could you tell us what has happened in Hawaii, and as we go on, has anybody else been able to join us from your group?
Well, I'm not sure. I sent an email out. Whether people will call in, I'm not sure, but I'm here and will do my best. I hope some of the others will call in. But let me just set the stage on this issue here. On the island of Hawaii, we have the largest military live fire training base outside of the continental United States. It's called Pohakuloa Training Area. It's 133,000 acres, and it's used by all the branches of the military, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And it's been in existence for about 50 years or more. And in 2007, our small peace organization detected radiation coming off the base 4 to 5 times the background readings with our small handheld monitors. 3 months later, that would have been in August of 2007, the Army officially confirmed that depleted uranium spotting rounds called the Davy Crockett were used at this base back in the 60s, up perhaps the early 70s. that they claim they were just spotting rounds. How many of their records weren't clear? Hundreds, possibly thousands of them at this base. We've tried to get confirmation if other depleted uranium rounds, the penetrators or others, have been used. We've been stonewalled on this. And we've tried to get the testing, soil and air testing, on the base and around the base. Again, we've been stonewalled by the military. Finally, to bring the story up to date, just recently now, it's been discovered that several residents on this island are testing positive in their urine for uranium contamination. Some at three times what was in one report, I have it right here in front of me, it says the individual's uranium level exceeds three times the upper expected limit. Now we have three doctors, three MDs, and a naturopath that have patients with high uranium. One doctor said he has a cluster of patients. So we're trying to get the Department of Health in the state of Hawaii to do a full-on epidemiological study to look at what's causing this. We certainly have strong suspicion that this base contaminated with depleted uranium, but we want some action on it. We've also been challenging the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to get involved, but without much luck. But anyway, we've now have confirmation of people with uranium in their urine, and it's very disturbing to me. And on this island, we have some of the highest rates of cancer within the state of Hawaii, which seems disproportional to the high urban areas in Honolulu. But anyway, it's great to talk to you. I hope you can help shed some light on this, about how citizens groups can really challenge this. These have been basic urine tests done, but I'm wondering if you can comment on what is the best test to have done to detect this uranium, and how do we tell, here's the question I would have. The spotting rounds they said they used were just contained depleted uranium. Now, this area has been bombed for 40, 50 years since they claimed they used those spotting rounds. So it's likely they came under high explosives that could, I would assume, burn that depleted uranium and turn it into uranium oxide. But what are we dealing with here? What are the hazards? What kind of tests are best to detect it? What can citizens groups really do? This is a concern for the health and safety of the troops that train there, as well as the residents of this island and the large number of visitors that come to Hawaii looking to enjoy paradise. They don't expect to be encountering depleted uranium.
Well, I think one thing that's extremely important to understand, first off, it's not just the uranium emissions contamination on the main island, on the Big Island of Hawaii. We also have total confirmation, as you know, at Schofield Barracks.
That's correct.
We also have total confirmation, and we do know this from the United States Navy, and congressional, you know, inquiries and everything, that the U.S. Navy and the Coast Guard has been firing uranium munitions in the 50 cal and the 20 millimeter Phalanx off the coast of Hawaii in pristine waters. So, you know, we got extensive use of uranium munitions all over in Hawaii and the contamination. The other thing, as you mentioned, is the fact that the depleted uranium is used as components of other weapon systems. And so, as you had mentioned, the Davy Crockett, okay, mm-hmm. where you had a spotting round for the Davy Crockett, again, depleted uranium and everything else. So we got extensive problems throughout there. When all this came about, you know, when you're talking about when they started finding all this, I got a, you know, a phone call from my cousin, and he said, Doug, you know, you're the guy that did it. You're the DU guy. We need help out here in Hawaii. And then all of us started working together, as you know, mm-hmm. quite a bit. Senator Inouye has absolutely, totally confirmed in letters to him and to all of us that depleted uranium munitions absolutely were used there. Okay, so we know that for a fact. So now we're running into a serious problem. When we look at depleted uranium munitions, again, I have to come on down as we put all this stuff together, as I started to do our, you know, our initial discussion. The depleted uranium munitions consist of kinetic energy penetrators, okay? Mm-hmm. And these are tank rounds, Bradley fighting vehicle rounds, airplane rounds, and everything else. We got the Navy vessels all have Navy Phalanx on. They all have the 50 cal rounds. So what the munitions we have that have been used in Hawaii, just like all over the place, we got obviously the 5.56 millimeter round for the M16 or the M4. We have the 7.62 millimeter round for the machine gun or the rifle. We have the 50 caliber round for the machine gun. Then we have the 20 millimeter round for the Navy Phalanx. And that 20 millimeter round for the Navy Phalanx is right at 200 grams of solid uranium. And it's uranium-238, 234, 235, uranium-236, plutonium, neptunium, and americium. That's the isotopic relationship of depleted uranium munitions with primarily uranium-238. In addition to that, we have the 25 millimeter fired by the Bradley fighting vehicle. Then we have the 30 millimeter fired by the A-10 Warthog aircraft and the helicopters and all the other gunships. And up and beyond that, we have the tank rounds, and those are 105 millimeter, 120 millimeter, 125 millimeter tubes. And again, the rounds themselves are smaller than in diameter. They're like a gigantic dart. Now, the depleted uranium, and this is where you came into play with the Davy Crockett, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's a component of the Davy Crockett, okay, for the spotting round. We also have the depleted uranium as a component of the bunker busters and the cruise missiles. In addition to that, what we have, again, probably used out there in the training ranges because they have to do it, are what we call the ATEM and the PETEM. These are cluster bombs, okay? Now, the cluster bombs, again, with the depleted uranium, they're just like small bombs or landmines that are spread all over the place. So, again, a lot of problems there with all the different types of munitions. In addition to that, when we are shooting up equipment and all the different equipment, a lot of the equipment that we're shooting up contains radiological components. For example, we brought back a whole bunch of Iraqi equipment, which is Soviet equipment, and that contained all kinds of radiological isotopes, which when shot up or destroyed obviously get spread into the wind, so you got extensive contamination. Now, one thing that we do know, again, coming back to the use of uranium munitions, as a consequence of the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute study, which we started, and you guys have all had opportunity to read that, again, people can go to the grassrootspeace.org website or go to Beyond Treason to obtain those documents if they haven't read them. What we had to do is then from the AAPI study, now the Secretary of the Department of Veteran Affairs, General Eric Shinseki, who is now Secretary Shinseki, issued the order creating what's known as the Depleted Uranium Project, for which I became the director. And as a part of that, we had to write the Army regulations and the procedures for cleanup for depleted uranium. Now, I think one of the things that the people in Hawaii have got extremely frustrated is that neither Department of Energy, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, or the Army, the Navy, or the Air Force, or the Marines wants to comply with their own guidelines. Is that correct?
Well, we certainly don't have any indication they're complying with anything. They want to deny this whole, keep the lid on it.
Yeah. See, that goes back to the Los Alamos memorandum, again, that we received, that was given in March of 1991, ordering me and all of us involved to lie in our reports on the use of the health and environmental effects of depleted uranium. At the same time, we got another memo also from March of 1991 from the Defense Nuclear Agency, which cited this stuff as an extreme health hazard, okay? So a serious health hazard. So all of this stuff is just coming totally together. As a consequence, what we did from all of this stuff, and you've had an opportunity to read it and review it and everything, while the director of the Depleted Uranium Project, we did all the research. Okay, at the Nevada test site, Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland, Fort McClellan, Alabama. I mean, we were all over the place. And what I did is we wrote U.S. Army Regulation 700-48. Now, this is the management of, quote, The title of this is Army Regulation 700-48, Management of Equipment Contaminated Depleted Uranium or Other Radioactive Commodities. I had to include all of it, not just depleted uranium, because radiological materials are an extensive part of all other kinds of weapon systems, and you have a whole host of different isotopes that are involved in those, either in the weapon systems themselves or the equipment that uses them. And so out there are the ranges when they're blowing everything up. All this stuff is just spread all over the place. Now, when this Army regulation, I wrote it in 1995, but again, we went through the iterations, and the effective date was 16 October of 2002. And again, saying that it should be followed by everybody, by order of the Secretary of the Army, under General Eric K. Shinseki's signature. So at that time, he was Chief of Staff. When General Shinseki, who was Secretary of the VA, and this goes back to why the veterans can't get their medical care today, or the delayed or denied, and why the civilians can't get their medical care, okay? They don't want the testing. It's very simple, as they were ordered years ago to do it, and they know that it's a serious health effect, and if they acknowledge or admit to any of the problems, then what they're now is accountable not only for all the military personnel, myself and my team, and the thousands up and beyond our actual team of 400 and about 24 people, I think, but now they're responsible for everything. Okay? So again, the Army has a direct responsibility for medical care for everybody, direct responsibility to comply with all the health and environmental requirements, not only of the United States, but the host nations, and also all local environmental laws and regulations dealing with this.
Are you saying that this regulation, now that we even have evidence that uranium showing up in the urine, should the Army be testing civilians here too?
Yeah, the problem you're running into, absolutely, they're required to under the Army regulations. Okay, because they use uranium munitions, they're now responsible for the medical and environmental of all individuals. It's not just dealing directly with military personnel. Okay, now the other thing, too, and this goes back to what was warned, as you just said, we know we have total confirmation from Senator Inouye, we got total confirmation from the Army. Even the guys that I dealt with that went out to Hawaii, trying to cover it all up, Colonel Bob Cherry, Colonel Mark Melanson, again, trying to cover this up. I think you met those guys at the conference, didn't you, or a hearing?
Yeah, they were out here as part of hearings with the NRC, yeah.
So anyhow, what we have is under Army Regulation 700-48, Section 2-4, these are the specific requirements for radiological contamination, and we're going to read part of these so that you understand. During peacetime or as soon as operational risk permits, the division, the commander, joint task force, commander's radiation safety officer will identify, segregate, isolate, secure, and label all radiologically contaminated equipment. Procedures to minimize the spread of radioactivity will be implemented as soon as possible. Radiologically contaminated equipment does not prevent the use of the equipment. You know, you need to understand the hazards, but you still have to take care of it. Okay, you have to get explosive ordnance people involved. Now, one of the problems we run into with depleted uranium munitions, we have all types of conventional explosives. These conventional explosives have incredible adverse health and environmental effects, as totally confirmed in Vieques, Puerto Rico. So I think with the two training areas, what you have both on Oahu and on Hawaii, we're seeing the same thing as what happened in Vieques, Puerto Rico. I think you've talked to those people, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had contact with them.
So it's kind of frustrating to have it both, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, there's even been reports now on Oahu at Schofield Barracks that in their military's zeal to build their striker brigade facilities over there, they actually dug up a lot of the contaminated soil at Schofield Barracks and transported it on public highways and dumped it in Hawaiian homeland areas on the west coast of the island. So they've actually probably spread that radiation all around. They didn't have any license from the NRC to do that either. They just did it.
Yeah, they're not allowed to do that. I want to make it very clear. According to the Army regulation signed by General Shinseki, okay, as the Chief of Staff, radioactive material and waste will not be locally disposed of through burial, submersion, incineration, destruction in place, or abandonment. Yeah, well, very clear. All the area has to be sealed off and isolated from everything else. You can't allow any fires in the area. You can't allow any continued detonations. One of the things that we saw, and I went down to Vieques, Puerto Rico, and from talking with them, they continued to blow everything up, and we could see the radiological and measure the radiological clouds, not only on Vieques and on the immediate terrain, but transposing all over the main island of Puerto Rico and all over the place. And that's what you're seeing there. So once we started getting the reports and you started reporting that you're actually measuring radiological contamination coming off-site, we got an extensive problem. Now, if I remember some time ago, we also had a problem with Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts going into areas where we had probable contamination.
Well, there's a Girl Scout camp located just downwind, surrounded by this Puahkaloa training area. So they're in right in the middle of it all, and the winds go through this area between the big mountains of Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. The winds go through there 40, 50, 60 miles an hour with visible dust devils in the air. So that stuff's getting transported all around. But it's just appalling, the stonewalling we've been getting from the military. Now, you know, the latest thing is they're in the process of getting this license from the NRC to possess this depleted uranium at Puahkaloa. And the Army's latest letter tells the NRC they want a license if they even need one at all. They contend they don't need one. But if they have to get one, make sure it has no conditions and no requirements in the license. Now, what does that amount to? It's nothing. Absolutely. They want to continue to bomb an area that's known to be contaminated. And this isn't just small bombing. They're firing 16 to 20 million live fire rounds a year up there, including everything from small arms to howitzers to fighter jets to even have B-2 bombers flying from Guam to bomb at Puahkaloa up there.
So we've got all the types of munitions, because most of the munitions today have uranium components or radioactive isotopes in them. That was the reason when we wrote this regulation and put the guidelines together, we covered so many isotopes because of the extensive use in all of our equipment and just the stuff that at the targets are going to blow up. So, I mean, talking about an extensive problem.
Yeah.
Now, some of the health effects, just before I read from the list of health effects, could you relate some of the health effects that have been reported by military and civilian personnel, you know, involved in Hawaii?
Well, I don't have the figures here in front of me, but on the Department of Health website for the state of Hawaii, they list the various cancers throughout the state on different islands. And this, the big island here, it has something like 11 of the 17 highest cancer rates of all the islands on this island. Now, what particular cancers and all, I don't recall all the specifics ones, but there are elevated cancer risks on this island. But I would like to hear from you, some of the specific health effects. I assume it has related to kidneys.
We got a whole host. The health effects of the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Division 11 Director has confirmed for depleted uranium are, quote, sleep problems, mood swings. This is psychological effects, tremendous effects. Symptoms in upper and lower respiratory system. On my own, what is diagnosed as reactive airway disease. Neuropsychological symptoms, including memory loss. Chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome. Skin rashes, unusual hair loss. Aching joints. Headaches. Abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, all of the female gynecological disorders, menstrual disorders and everything, early hysterectomies and everything, gastrointestinal symptoms, the recurrent diarrhea and constipation, you don't know which way it's going to go, nervous system disorders such as numbness in the limb, multiple chemical sensitivity, and birth defects in children whose parents were exposed. So that's what the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs confirms, that Have we had anybody else join us? Lauren or anybody?
Hello, this is Isaac Harp, also known as Paca.
Hey, Isaac, welcome. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Paca, for joining us.
Yeah,
by the way, is a leading activist, and he led the charge against the NRC trying to license this depleted uranium at Walkerall. So it's great to have you, Isaac.
Mahalo, Jim, for elaborating on the situation with the depleted uranium in here. And I was listening in, I noticed you were discussing some of the issues regarding cancer. And I did some research and on the government data, and I discovered that not only does the downwind residents of the Pohakuloa training area have the highest rates of extremely rare forms of cancer here on this island, but it's higher than everywhere else in the entire island chain of Hawaii, and in fact larger than anywhere in the United States. So it's a very specific downwind target area, and it's pretty clear that this is affecting the people down here. And my big concern is that the Army continues to allow live fire training in areas that are possibly contaminated with depleted uranium, and they haven't been able to locate what they even admit to have been imported there. But they're not really sure. They're assuming that the use of the depleted uranium spotting round were isolated to certain locations. They have not been able to confirm it. And I fear that the continued live fire training continues to liberate this poison into the air and sickening the people. I myself have a lot of the symptoms that you just mentioned, Doug, and I know a lot of other people as well that have those symptoms. And as Jim pointed out, we now have people coming forward with elevated levels of uranium in the urine. And the big problem I think we are facing here, we understand, as you mentioned, there are regulations to be followed, but the problem we have is that we can't get anyone to enforce those regulations. If you have any advice we might be able to follow to get some actual enforcement moving forward, we'd really appreciate any guidance you can provide.
That's, you know, obviously one of the things, and again, we'll continue on with the health effects. The United States Department of Defense, the commander of the Operational Test and Evaluation Command, this is Colonel J. Edgar Wakayama, in preparation for what's now known as Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, where they have used incredible thousands of tons of uranium munitions, did a briefing where he confirmed the radiological components. But in this briefing, he also says, quote, the alpha particle taken inside the body in large doses is hazardous, producing cell-damaging cancer. Lung cancer is well documented. Now, that's exactly what my guys died from. Continues on, quote, the beta particle hazardous to skin and the lens of the eye. Now, I've had so many eye surgeries, I was just down to Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis last week, where the VA is now authorizing additional surgery that they cannot conduct, the military can't conduct, but they have to go down to one of the leading hospitals in the United States to have it done. So we have all of this stuff. The other thing, too, what we know from the whole thing is EU is chemically toxic. Again, this is a direct quote. Acts like a heavy metal like lead. The target bone is a kidney and the bone. And what we have learned also is it affects the teeth. Because what's happened, the uranium is taking out the calcium and the phosphorus, so just not only out of the bone but out of the teeth, so they just literally fall apart. Quote, urine samples containing uranium are mutagenic as determined by the Ames test. What that means is don't pee on your fingers, because that's direct carcinogenic, you know, put on anything. The cultured human stem bone cell line with DU also transformed the cells and become carcinogenic. This is where we're seeing all the leukemias. Again, that's all confirmed going back to the 1943 Los Alamos Memorandum. The other extensive problems, and this comes into where, to me, it was extremely, extremely important with the Girl Scout camp being there, okay? Quote, the three major routes of human exposure to depleted uranium are wounding by shrapnel, inhalation, lungs and thoracic lymph nodes, ingestion, most among children, playing and eating contaminated soil and contaminated drinking water and food in the community. To me, that's frightening. So when we had all these findings years ago, and then the Department of Defense is confirming all of this stuff as they tell everybody else what we got all the problems, the fact that they've got, you know, non-compliance here, and that you have a Girl Scout camp on that, on the main island of Hawaii, within, you know, within basically the firing range, that needs to be closed down as soon as possible. You know, I mean, just simple as that.
I believe they did close down the Girl Scout camp, and one of the individuals that has been working out with us on this issue here in Hawaii, Corey Hardin, I believe has been affected by the depleted uranium when she was a young girl participating in activities there. I'm not really sure what it is, what kind of illness it is or what, but she's ultra sensitive to many different chemicals, and she can't even drink bottled water. She has to have a specially prepared water for her to drink. She can't even drink bottled water.
Yeah, I've talked with Corey several times, again, about all these issues, and hopefully Corey can join us this evening. I'm not sure. You know, I think one thing we need to bring up, and this is extremely important. I mean, I've got cousins, as you know, got me involved, that live on obviously Maui and on Oahu. But one thing not everybody is aware of, and I think this is part of history, and again, this is very, very important. On January 16th of 1893, the United States Marines were working in direct cooperation with the President of the United States at that time, Grover Cleveland, and also the Special Commissioner and everything, James H. Blount, invaded Hawaii, which was a sovereign nation, to seize Hawaii and then annex it to the United States. Isn't that correct?
Yes, they came in, they did not annex or lawfully annex Hawaii, but they passed a joint resolution which has no lawful authority beyond the borders of the United States in a fake process to say that they annexed Hawaii.
Yeah, so this was Joint Resolution 55, again, just put out where they just decided, again, divine right of kings, we're going to take it and claim that it's legal to do so.
Right.
So Hawaii is basically still a sovereign nation that was seized by the United States. Is that correct?
That's correct. And Native Hawaiians such as myself understand that this is not a lawful part of the United States, but we are a military occupied nation. And we continue to strive to regain the control of our country. The United States is not a very good steward, as we are discussing today.
So I think, again, this is part of the problem, what we're looking into, because we're looking at the entire situation that's developed. The United States, for years and years and years, has radiological, chemical, and biological weapon systems, conventional weapon systems throughout Hawaii. Hawaii was a pristine environment with a very, very fragile ecosystem that requires, you know, total control, environmental contamination. And that's one of the reasons I know when I've flown in and out of Hawaii, I mean, just trying to bring things in and out of the islands through customs is so critical that it's always been this thing. And I think when we look at the other thing, too, when we come on up, again, dealing with what you're talking about, the United States, again, I'm not thinking, pull this all up, made a confirmation, a resolution, and again, to apologize to the residents of Hawaii for the illegal seizure of their islands.
Yeah, so they did apologize in 1993 under the Bill Clinton administration, but beyond apologizing for the illegal overthrow of our government, there has been nothing done to rectify the situation. And Hawaii continues to serve as the experiment station for the United States. There's a lot of GMO activity going out here. There's experiments for carbon dioxide dumping in the ocean. The list just goes on and on and on. It's very frustrating, and it's hard to deal with somebody who's basically holding a gun to your head. And I also wanted to point out to your listeners that you might want to do some research on the bombing of Pearl Harbor. to discover that it was actually something that the United States wanted to occur, and I believe the commander of Pearl Harbor was concerned with having all of the military ships in one isolated location like Pearl Harbor, so he was trying to move some of the ships out to protect some of the United States ships, and he was replaced with somebody that was more compliant with the wishes of the upper government, and left the ships in there, and that resulted in loss of a lot more lives than would have been lost otherwise, and a lot more taxpayers' dollars in the form of military weaponry.
Yeah, so there's a case history here of blatant disregard, I think, for the health and the environment and everything else. So again, we're seeing the same thing in Hawaii that we're seeing in Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, obviously Puerto Rico, Vieques, Puerto Rico. We're seeing the same extent of effects throughout the Balkans, the same thing in Somalia. We have also in other areas in Africa, Libya, as you know, extensively bombed with uranium munitions during that civil war where the NATO wind basically just started blowing up the place all over the place, killing men, women, and children. You know, as a military officer, I have to come back and look at this since I have the responsibility for resolving the depleted uranium problems and, you know, where are they at and what needs to be done. And so it just becomes extraordinarily frustrating. The question that's been brought up a lot is on the medical issues, okay? And in 1993, in preparation for the use of uranium munitions in Somalia, okay, which is in Africa, that's up in the Horn of Africa, would be in the northeast corner of Africa. We've got Somalia is coming on one border of the Red Sea, and obviously Yemen is the other country that borders the Red Sea. And what had happened is in preparation for this, we were able to get a direct medical order issued, okay? And again, this is dated October 13th of 1993. Now, it requires immediate medical testing using the radiobioassay procedures that we developed and initially recommended back in 1991 for anybody that's been downwind within any destroyed area, in any, you know, downwind area of fires within a structure or anything. So it was very clear that acknowledging depleted uranium munitions are used against structures, not just against armor. In fact, what I found out when we did the research in Nevada test site, they're far more effective against a wooden structure, an apartment building, than they are against a tank. And that was most frightening. Now, the medical radiobioassay consists of testing done within 24 to 72 hours of initial exposure. And what that requires is a complete radiobioassay. What you do is a nasal and pharyngeal swab. You collect feces for 24 hours, and you collect urine for 24 hours. Now, again, these all have to be isolated and put under special precautions to prevent contamination and everything. One of the things that came up is the U.S. Army absolutely to this date is still refused, like the Department of Veteran Affairs has refused to provide the testing within the required window. What we do know, again, in the medical literature, and this is why we wrote the procedures as placed, after 30 days post-exposure, or within that 1 month, if you wait until then, the amount of uranium in your urine will be less than 1/1000th of whatever hit the body. This is what's called biological half-life, and again, this is in the Department of, you know, military medical stuff and the civilian medical radiological medical handbook, you know, very clearly, and there's some actually curves and graphs that you can do it. What happened with my own testing, when we came out of the field in November of 1994 after what's called the depleted uranium burn test that I conducted at the Nevada test site in Mercury, Nevada, the Department of Energy actually collected my urine. And they got back by the beginning of the year, February, confirmed by March of 1995, that I was blowing uranium 5,000 times permissible level. And Department of Energy never told me for 2.5 years. And so we're running into an extensive problem. What we're having today is they're doing the analysis and then claiming the value that they have at that time is what it was, and then they claim that it's in dietary limits for something else. Now, you don't have any natural radioactive materials in Hawaii, do you, that I know of?
No, we don't.
Very low, yeah.
Pardon?
It's very low here. The
yeah, you don't have any. I mean, the water has been tested. There's no radioactive isotopes in the water.
The volcanic rocks here in Hawaii are supposedly lower in radiological material than the ocean water itself.
So, in other words, virtually nothing there.
Virtually nothing.
Okay. And so you've got all of these extensive problems. So, again, all this stuff is supposed to have been done. Now, the problem we run into, again, is the sensitivity of the equipment to do it. Now, the Department of Veteran Affairs right now, again, in their latest report on Desert Storm written by Colonel John Gingrich, claims that they've been following 79 individuals from Desert Storm, you know, that survived friendly fire and everything were involved, and they have no health effects, and they've been following them. And obviously, you know, that's confirmed that's a total lie because we had 424 involved. They've never tested. Most of you guys have never tested. The General Accounting Office in their 2000 report has confirmed that and confirmed it over and over again. And even the other day, I still was unable to get members of my own team medical care 20 years after the effect, after the fact. And the current guys, we can't get the medical care. So we're running into an extensive problem. The Department of Energy and the Department of Defense, again, issued that memorandum, and you guys have all seen it, the Los Alamos Memorandum,
right,
ordering everybody to lie, cheat, and steal in the reports concerning the known adverse health and environmental effects of uranium munitions in order to sustain the use of them and avoid all liability. And for me, that's totally inexcusable. I think what we need to have happen, and again, hopefully this would help, I'm not sure, how do we get this as a major issue in the presidential campaign? So we need to not only get the senators and legislators and the House of Representatives in Hawaii totally involved, but we need to get both candidates for president totally involved in answering the questions, not only on just on the Hawaiian contamination, which is not just the radiological, but it's all the contamination from military operations. Because you guys, you mentioned, how long have those ranges been involved with conventional explosives and chemical and biological?
Over 50 years.
Over 50 years. Wow.
Yeah, and then we also, as we're working on the depleted uranium issue, we did some research and also discovered that there was a lot of chemical and biological weaponry experiments conducted here in Hawaii without the public knowledge. So we don't know what the effects of those might have been. But it's pretty clear the United States Department of Defense has a new policy of don't look, don't tell. And if anybody learns of anything, deny, deny, deny. And we were hoping to get some kind of monitoring, air quality, water quality monitoring in place. But we're not sure if there's any available technology that can detect the low amounts of depleted uranium that may be liberated from live fire training. Do you know if there's any technology available that could be effective in monitoring, for example, air quality?
Unfortunately, no, because when we did the Nevada test and what I did, you have to understand, we took the air monitors, we put them within the vehicles as we were blowing them up and burning them. We surrounded the whole area, and I've got all the maps and the graphs, and I shared this with my cousin and Corey out there. We can share those with you also. Again, extensive monitoring systems. So what we found out is we didn't detect it. Even when we knew we were blowing it up, extensive contamination, the videos and the photograph have you seen where you can't see through the air because of the uranium contamination is so great, doesn't show up on the monitoring systems. One of the problems we ran into with the filter systems and the air monitors where we're actually trying to get them on the Wattman filter paper is goes in the air. Is the way the uranium munitions function, okay, is it'll clog it up or it'll also basically gets clogged up with the other stuff, and this stuff falls to the earth before you can get it into your sampling chambers. We had a cascade sampler, and what this is basically looking at gravitational collection within the equipment as we blew it up. and even there we didn't have it. One of the things that became extraordinarily frightening to all of us is when we did this stuff, and again, have to understand, on my test where they came up 5,000 times permissible, that test was done within minutes after coming off of the range. In other words, the Army didn't do it. The Army didn't want it done, and that's why they didn't tell me for 2.5 years that they, you know, had it come up. When we took it, and then finally when 1999, when the Department of Veterans Affairs finally did a urine sample on me, this is Melissa McDermott, Baltimore VA. Myself and Jerry Wheat were in adjoining hospital rooms. And I think you guys have talked to Jerry. You know, he's got all the cancers and all the other problems associated with this, and birth defects in his children that were conceived afterwards. But when we did the took the curve out of the radiological measurement handbook, it fit right on. In other words, the amount of decay in what was measured fit almost exactly on the curve as predicted in my own case, which it became extraordinarily frightening. So you have that. Now, the problem we run into is trying to get sampling. Is if you try to do, and this is what happened during the Nevada test, even when we knew we blew it all up, because of the way it everything worked and trying to get a soil sample that we could measure, they kept coming up with saying, there's nothing here, even though you could see it extensively. I think you guys have all seen video of the Nevada test, correct?
Correct.
And seen how extensively, I mean, this stuff goes out. And for that, that's the reason why in the U.S. Army Common Task response for depleted uranium, and this is a U.S. Army thing again, task number 031503-1017, respond to depleted uranium low-level radioactive materials and Dole-REM hazards. So this, again, is totally applicable to Hawaii, just like Vieques, Puerto Rico, just like it is over here in Jefferson Proving Ground in Indiana, which is southeast of Indianapolis, which are the medical problems and environmental problems there are just catastrophic. And then all over the place where we're seeing it. But again, you know, again, it requires a thorough isolation, thorough decontamination of everything, which is extraordinarily difficult. Again, requires everybody in this area, they have to wear what's called personal protective equipment. Now, one thing we learned in the Nevada test site test is the Army and the Department of Energy respiratory protectors will not work to protect you. Okay? And that's because when we go to the CRC, Chemical Handbook, Handbook of Chemistry and Physics, and we look at Section F, we realize that the size of the particulates are down at 0.1 and 0.01 micron. The best filters we have for respiratory protection, which is level B, not encapsulated, but level B, that's where he has actually filters, is 0.5 to 0.6 micron. In other words, this stuff goes right through it like it's an open barn door. The other thing, too, in the common task training, and again, this is trying to get compliance, and I've yanked the Army all over every which way but loose. My old team members that are still in the Army dealing with depleted uranium, up at Aberdeen Proving Ground, Maryland, and everything else, I'm going to quote, again, very, very important, quote, contamination will make food and water unsafe for consumption. So again, we got the military coming down with extensive contamination, not only radiological, but all the other explosive contamination. And the question is, how do we get that resolved? In this latest set of hearings, what has happened from the latest set of hearings and the Army's response?
You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned there's no technology to monitor the air quality. And in the Army's most recent response, they're citing that the cost will be unbearable. I believe it was $100,000 annually to do air sampling, air monitoring, and technology is not available to conduct efficient or effective air monitoring. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, see, again, it doesn't make any sense because what they're trying to do is avoid all responsibility, going back to Los Alamos Memorandum. They're acknowledging they have a problem. We've got that. Senator Inouye has totally confirmed that, as everybody else. Again, Dennis Kucinich has and other individuals have been involved. But we just keep running into a roadblock on how to get compliance with doing everything. Again, I think what it is and what's happened with the incredible number of casualties now from Operation Desert Storm, which is over 300,000 and over 100,000 dead U.S. military alone, and now for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, as you guys have seen, we're looking at well over 1 million U.S. military casualties, way over a million, probably 1.5 million. The VA is estimated for budget purposes within the year it'll approach 1.5 million U.S. military. And we're over 200,000 dead. They're dying like flies all over the place. I mean, I've lost some more on my team just in the last year, as you guys are totally aware. So again, we're coming on down to looking at the same problem over and over and over again. How do we get political awareness? How do we get the people that are totally responsible and accountable to comply with their own requirements? What success have you had over there with the television and newspaper sources?
Well, some of the less than mainstream newspapers have been publishing some information, but the primary media, television and newspaper, has basically tried to stay away from the issue. We're not getting much success in getting the word out to the broader community here. It's really frustrating that we can't even let the people know here know that they're threatened by this stuff.
One of the best things, this is Jim, one of the best things we had was 4 years ago, we got the county council for the island of Hawaii here to pass this resolution to call for stopping all live fire at Puhakualoa until there's a full assessment and cleanup of the depleted uranium. But the military just ignores that.
See, the military can't ignore that because under Army Regulation 700-48, they must comply with all local environmental laws and regulations and requirements. So in other words, your mayor, your city council, your area council, however, your county government can enact a law or a requirement or tell them a law, and they have to comply.
Yeah, this was only a resolution, so maybe we have to take it a step further, but getting that kind of strong stuff against the military in such a heavily militarized state is very difficult. Because the military throws so much weight around.
Yeah, they do because of the economics and everything. Now, the military in Hawaii, the economic contributions in the military in Hawaii are extraordinary, aren't they?
Big, especially
they are. Senator Inouye is also on the main military committee in Congress, which facilitates a lot of those military funding coming to Hawaii. Unfortunately, the military funding is for expansion and not so much decommissioning or cleanup.
Yeah, and again, the other thing, too, we got to look, because I was totally involved as an environmental scientist, look at compliance with the environmental law. Because in 1992, the U.S. Army and the military was found in willful violation of NEPA. And we put all that requirements back together again while we were at the Corps of Engineers Research Laboratory, co-located with the University of Illinois right here in Champaign-Urbana. Now, the other thing, too, under the EPA requirements, and this is where it came in with the Vieques, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has a specific requirements for mixed waste. Quote, approaches for the remediation of federal facility sites contaminated with explosives or radioactive waste. This is EPA 625R-93. 013, dated September of 1993. And again, what we have, again, the same thing, and all these stuff, the conventional explosions and munitions there, with all the radiological stuff we're going to have, is the conventional munitions and residues, again, consists of phosphorus, pyrophoric materials, napalm, triethylam, metal incinerates, lead sulfate, lead azide, nitroglycerin, mercury, I mean, this list goes on and on and on. And so the contamination that can be resuspended, because what we know, and again you're running into, which is what you've confirmed over and over again, and my cousins have confirmed, is we're seeing the same physiological and psychological effects, not only from the radiological components, from all the known health effects of the conventional explosives. Because when this stuff is blown up, it's not consumed, it's not changed into just carbon and water. You got totally incomplete combustion and burning. So I mean, you've got a nightmare, don't we?
We have a nightmare. And Doug, is a test that then you'd recommend, it is this urine test. That's the one. Now, it's much easier when you walk off a range like you did to be tested in 24 hours. We have a more difficult thing here of a civilian population. How do you know when you've been exposed to the DU? And when can you get tested? You're saying there's a big drop-off after 30 days from exposure.
Well, it's actually after 72 hours. We're starting to drop after 72 hours.
Yeah.
See, that was one of the problems we're running into. And again, you know, when it came up, when this first came up in Hawaii, how do we get the testing and get everything done? You know, we got direct reports. Some of the military personnel there were directly involved, have come down with all the same health effects that we've already listed that were involved there at, you know, with the stuff. So we've talked with them. And again, some remain in Hawaii, others come back to the United States, and a lot of them are, you know, they're up in their, you know, they're getting a older, you know, age right now because of the Vietnam era is when so many of them were there. So again, we're running into the whole continuous thing. Again, that EPA document I cited deals directly with it. Well, you know, we're running, I mean, we can go on for a long time here.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to do tonight, guys, is get this out on the radio show, get talked about the extensive problems that you guys are having and the call for need. Can you, in the last couple of minutes, can you give some contact information for people that might want to help you or talk to you?
Well, this is Jim, and I'm with a peace organization, Malu Aina. My phone number is area code 808-966-7622. That's 808-966-7622, and my email is J-A, initials J-A at Malu, M-A-L-U, hyphen A-I-N-A dot org. Malu, and there's a website, Malu, hyphen Aina dot org, where we have a lot of the material on it. How can I help you?
As far as myself, the best contact for me is through email, and my email address is I-M-U-A. Hyphen H-A-W-A-I-I at H-A-W-A-I-I dot R-R dot com.
And we'll make sure this is up, posted up on the radio network, on the archives. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Can we continue this conversation again on another Sunday in the future?
Sure. Sounds great. And thank you so much for helping us to get the word out.
Thank you very much. And keep working and doing a good effort. We've got to make sure health and environmental effects of military operations are taken care of.
Aloha to the world from Hawaii.
Aloha.
Yeah, mainly. Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Another issue of Warrior Connection.